This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. Today, we get to talk to somebody who delves into a world that every time I hear the title sounds super secret, and I always want to learn more about it.
Ooh, I'm very curious. What problem are we solving today?
How can you keep your computer safe?
Oh, you're right, Jeff. This is a very important question, and there's probably some security involved. How can you keep your computer safe? Who is our guest today?
Our guest today is the very smart Ella Schwartz, and she is a cybersecurity engineer.
Welcome to the show, Ella.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We are excited to have you with us. So, cybersecurity engineer, can you tell us what that is? What do you do?
I guess at its core, I keep computers and information safe. But it's not just computers. It's also making sure that information doesn't get out and get into the wrong hands.
Ooh. Okay. That sounds very intriguing. We're going to keep using that word throughout.
I think that's going to be our word for this episode. Okay, so let's dig deeper into that. What kinds of information are you keeping safe?
Well, secrets. The truth is, secrets are information that people don't want released. So if the secret is released, then it's no longer a secret, right?
Okay.
Everybody knows.
So it's just information. So what kind of secrets? Well, sometimes it's as simple as making sure that a person's credit card information, address, phone numbers kept nice and safe. But sometimes it's something even bigger than that, like government secrets. And those are super important for a government to want to keep that secret secure.
I would think so.
Sure.
So do you work with those types of secrets for governments and all of those different things that you're allowed to tell us, by the way?
I do. So I do a lot of work for the federal government, and that's actually the majority of my job these days. And the federal government, they are very super paranoid about people coming in and seeing their data. So in order to do work with the federal government, they require you to have clearance. And so I have what's known as top secret clearance. And that means I'm allowed to see top secret information. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean I've seen the top secret information, but it means I'm allowed to.
And got it.
I'll keep you guessing on what I've seen and if I've seen it.
Also, it means you can't talk about it with only certain people, I'm guessing.
Well, if you have top secret, I could talk about it.
Okay, so you just talked about all the way from those top secret government level pieces of information, all the way down to just an individual's credit card number. Yeah. So cybersecurity really covers that whole gamut of information?
It really does. It's as simple as keeping information on your home laptop safe and secure, all the way to keeping our nation's secrets. So it covers the full spectrum.
Yeah.
That is a really, really big job.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a question. So when you buy the computer, it comes with some type of security system on it. Like, you know, the one that I'm thinking is McAfee, but you can think of any other types that they have. Is that enough to keep your computer safe? Or are you telling us we should be doing other things too?
So that's enough usually to keep the viruses away.
Okay.
But cybersecurity is more than just keeping the viruses away. It's also about keeping hackers away. And sometimes hackers can gain access to your system just by asking for information and asking you to let them on. And that's called social engineering. So that's a whole other dimension of cybersecurity.
Oh, well, can you explain what social engineering is? Now I'm curious. I'm hoping that this has not happened to me.
So sometimes it's as simple as, you know, you could be playing Minecraft or Fortnite and you're in a chat room and you think you might be talking to like another Minecraft player, but you might actually be talking to a bad guy. You might actually be talking to a hacker who wants to get on your computer. So you can be going about Minecraft and talking about building your village and, you know, the diamond sword. And somebody all of a sudden might say to you, hey, where do you live? Oh, you live, you know, you live here?
Okay.
That's cool. I know somebody that lived there, you know, when they might just come right out and say, tell me your address. Or, and you may believe that they're another kid, or you may believe that they're your neighbor or a classmate, and they're someone completely different. And now you've given them information that might help them access your computer. And quite honestly, that's the most dangerous kind of behavior on the internet.
Oh,
okay. And these bad guys are doing this in video game chat rooms. So it sounds to me like there's really no off limits to what the bad guys might try to do.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be, the internet is a fabulous tool. It really is, but we have to be really responsible and safe and smart about going on the internet. And if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not right.
That's good to know. So this is what you do partially as your job, and you work for the government. Do you also tend to talk to kids and adults about how to keep themselves safe on the computer?
So the work I do with the government is preventative, right? We try to put up those big firewalls, big walls, strong walls so that hackers can't penetrate. And if you do a good job, then they can't get in. But a corollary to my job, and especially the work that I do writing books for children, I do talk a lot with classrooms and parents and give kids tips to stay safe on the internet and how to use the internet smartly, because it's a real problem. You know, it's kind of like with great power comes great responsibility, right?
Yes.
Power is a tool at your disposal, but you need to use it wisely. And
yes. Very good. Good point.
Okay. So I want to go back to the big side of it first, because this to me, like I like spy stories and that sort of intrigue. And that's what this is sounding like. So you just mentioned putting up those big, strong firewalls. So what I'll keep referring to as the bad guys can't get in.
Yeah.
So at that level, how do you know how to build the wall that will stop them? And I sort of relate this back. Sorry, this is a long way of asking around, but I relate this back to I'm not a computer guy. So this stuff is all new to me. I relate it all the way back to the three little pigs. And they built their houses out of straw and sticks and bricks. How do you know which things are the bricks in your world that are going to stop the bad guys?
I love that analogy. It's so because sometimes it might be okay to build the wall out of straw. And sometimes it might be okay to build it out of sticks. But if it's really, really important, you're going to building that wall out of brick. And how do you know? Well, that's the question, right? In technology, there's always a trade-off. If the information is super important, like we're talking nuclear secrets,
or
information that our nation's leaders really need to keep secure, you're going to throw everything you can at it, right? You're going to put up the brick.
Right.
And frankly, you're going to pay a lot of money to do that. The government is going to
pay that makes a lot of sense.
A lot of money. But sometimes the information may, all secrets are important, but if it gets out, it might not be catastrophic. Sometimes the government may make the choice that we don't need to throw all this money at it because it's not, it's important, but it's not that important.
Right.
So we'll put some safeguards in place. We'll put up the straw and that's enough. So security is always a trade-off. You don't want to make it overly complicated if it doesn't need to be, but if it needs to be,
right,
you throw everything at it.
That makes a lot of sense.
So I don't know if you can answer this, but have you had where you've built the firewall and then been hacked before? Can you talk a little bit about, like, what do you do if a hacker gets in? Can you get them back out?
That's the problem. So we had a situation. This was a couple of years ago where the State Department had a really bad hack and it was in the news.
Yes.
And they called us up, my team up, and they said, can you get them out? And it was a foreign nation. And we went in. Once hackers are in the system, it's very, very hard to get them out. They kind of travel about. Like, once they're in, they go everywhere.
Okay.
And they spread out. So it's really, really hard to get them out. And in that case, the easiest thing for us to do was to basically trash everything.
Wow.
And build everything fresh, knowing that they were on the outside. And during that window of time, passports, we couldn't issue any passports. So it was a real problem for the State Department. Like,
the
system was down and it was really embarrassing. And we learned a lot of lessons.
Yeah. And to build better walls out of better bricks or like titanium or something, right?
Like, pretty much. Yeah. That's exactly the right. That's exactly right. So we built it fresh and fingers crossed that they won't find those little holes that, you know, sometimes we think we plug up all the holes, but sometimes there are little holes that they burrow in somehow.
Wow.
This makes me think that, again, with the little piggy analogy, in terms of knowing when you want to put up that brick wall, when it really is that, to be able to put up the best brick wall that you can, do you sometimes have to think like a hacker in terms of how you would try to get through, knowing what you know?
Absolutely. I mean, code makers and code breakers, I feel like it's a constant struggle between the two, like a constant battle between
Right.
So the code makers are constantly trying to stay one step ahead of those code breakers, but they're getting smarter every day. They can find their way past some of our complicated software and encryption standards and crypto barriers. And I feel like it's a battle every day. Mm. Who's going to win?
Sounds like it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you can tell. Are these actual people or are they also using like AI type stuff to come at you?
Both of it. Yeah, both of it. So it's humans, it's AI, it's all of the above. When you're dealing with like the consumer, like the laptop in your home, it's usually like a person that's trying to
get
your credit card information or something like that. When you're dealing with major corporations or governments, they have networks of people and AI and systems behind them to, you know, get at what they want to get at.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
This sounds like a huge job, don't you think, Josh? Oh my gosh.
Yes, I said it earlier and I felt silly saying it, but the fact that this sounds like a big job all the way from literally the laptop I'm looking at right now as we record this, all the way up through national information, financial information, government secrets, and nuclear stuff, like you said. This leads me to wonder, are there enough cybersecurity people on the good side doing this work? Or is this one that we need to get more kids involved in doing this?
Oh my God, we always need more cyber specialists.
Okay.
Because as I said, like, there's always this like a race. It's a race with the hackers versus the good guys, right? And we always need more cyber specialists. But cybersecurity is so big and so broad. So we need people who can protect the laptops. We need people who can protect the servers. We need people who can protect the firewalls. We need people who can protect the information that how you can get into the locked room. You know, if you think about it, the fingerprint scans that let people into the data center.
Oh.
Like that information needs to be protected. There's a physical security of it also, because imagine you do such a great job keeping those computers safe, but someone can get into the locked room. Now they can get at everything you've worked so hard to protect. So cyber security is the digital, the physical, the practical, the impractical. It's all of it. It's a big industry, and we definitely need people to help.
Yeah. Them. So, okay, so this is kind of a twofold thing. So do you have to be a coder? And how did you get into this? Were you a coder kind of as a kid or in college or something?
So I went to college for engineering, but I did not go to college for cyber. You need to be a science and math minded to go into cybersecurity. Okay. I would say mathematics is super important. Most of the discoveries and the innovation that we make in cybersecurity involves math. Prime numbers are huge for the cybersecurity industry. We are still, as an industry, discovering prime numbers. And when a new prime number is discovered, it is a day to celebrate, in my industry at least. Now I can create ciphers and codes that are stronger than they were the day before. So prime numbers are like magic numbers for the crypto universe. And that's math, right? It's math. Right.
I was just going to say, kids, did you hear that?
Yeah, it's math.
You can celebrate numbers.
Numbers. Yes. And these prime numbers that we're talking about that are being discovered, they are massive, right? Like they are hundreds of pages long if you were to write them out on, And so they take these massive computers to find these prime numbers. But once you find them, you can use them. You can use them for encryption and you can use them for cryptography. And now we have in our arsenal something that much stronger to keep the hackers at bay. So to get into cyber, if you're interested in this sort of thing, I recommend math.
Okay. Lots of math.
And of course, computer engineering, writing code, being a coder is definitely helpful, but you don't have to be a programmer to be a cybersecurity person.
Okay.
I like hearing that. You didn't go to college specifically for this, but now you work on both ends of the spectrum, all the way down to families and their kids and how to keep themselves safe on their laptop through the large things that you were just talking about with the government. I think a lot of listeners, as they are thinking about what they want to do growing up, it's you go to high school, you pick what you're the best at, and you start doing that, and then you're going to end up going to college for that thing. And as soon as you're done college, you're going to start working at that thing. And I think a lot of our guests have really broken the seal on that is not always the way it's going to happen.
Right.
So many things in our world interconnect where you were an engineer, but now you're doing cybersecurity.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Just because you go to college for something doesn't mean that that's the thing that you have to do for the rest of your life. And sometimes life surprises you. Cybersecurity sort of fell into my lap because I was good at math and I was good at science and I had a computer background. And I figured I'd give it a shot. And then 20 years later.
I was going to say it.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's worked out as an excellent choice for you.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, because there are all these hackers and we like to, you know, and the bad guys, right? My job is always changing. I'm never bored at what I do.
Well, that's a definite plus, yes.
Because I always have to keep one step ahead of the industry to be successful at what I do.
Yes, absolutely. Well, so we've talked a lot about the government thing. Let's bring it back down to the laptop and the families, because I know this is something that parents want to, you know, help their kids understand. And parents themselves, of course, want to keep their, or even any adult wants to keep their information safe. You never love to wake up in the morning to a text like, hello, did you spend $1,000 at this? Because it's happened to me, right? Like I've had that happen and then you have to cancel your card. And then the people are like, was it ever out of your hand? And I'm like, no, I don't go anywhere. But of course I went to like a restaurant.
Yeah.
And then you give them your card and they walk away with it. So, I mean, I don't know if that happens, but I don't know where else I could have done. So do you have any tips for adults or kids to keep their information safe? Maybe don't let them walk away with your credit card. I don't know.
The cyber equivalent of that is never let them walk away with your information.
Right.
So you've all seen those emails that come in that say, respond to this. We're going to give you a new, you know, MacBook Pro.
Sure.
If you click on this link, you know, enter for a chance to win concert tickets.
Right.
And the truth is, if it's too good to be true, it's probably not true. And nobody wins those contests. They want you to click on it and they want your email or they want your information. Never, ever click on a link that you get in an email that says, for example, I got this one 3 days ago. I got an email that said, hey, I found this great picture of you.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah, I've gotten that email.
If it's a great picture of you, of course you're going to want to click on it. I mean,
it's a great picture. Hey, I look great.
I look great, right? Don't click on it. Just don't do it. Just don't do it. Because if you click on it, chances are you're going to do something pretty bad to your computer. And it probably invites these malware to come onto your computer. And then the hackers can do some damage to you. So tips. If it's too good to be true, it probably is. So don't click on things and enter, give away your information. Your information should be kept private. Never click on a link, especially if it's a good picture of you. And keep your passwords safe, right?
I will say one thing. So I started checking the email addresses because, you know, you'll say like I've gotten emails that'll say, hey, your Amazon account is blah, right? And I'm just like, first of all, it's to my wrong email, right? Because I know my Amazon Prime account is not this email. And then, but if you look at the address it came from, it's like joeschmo.com. And yeah. I'm like, that's not Amazon.
Well, Jen, you are super savvy. You are.
I just started looking at that and I was like, this doesn't match.
That is a very, very common scam. Hmm. And that's called phishing, spelled P-H-I-S-H.
Okay.
And
so, I've heard of that.
Yep. And yeah. What's happening there, it's very, very common. It's the most common scam out there. But what's happening there is somebody is spoofing a legitimate company like Amazon.
Or somebody else. I mean, Microsoft. There's, yeah.
And they're very, very good at it. Those emails look very, very convincing.
They do because some of them have the like logo that it looks like the company. And it's like your account or maybe it's like your account is this. And you kind of have to go, wait, that doesn't look right, as you said, right?
Yes. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so proud of you that you caught on. Those phishing scams, they are real. They cause a lot of damage. A lot of monetary loss every year.
Wow.
So if it comes from what looks to be a trusted, you know, like source like Amazon or Apple, or just if you're not expecting an email like that, just pay close attention. Look at the address it's coming from. Look for clues. Sometimes they even have like bad grammar or a lot of exclamation marks in the subject or caps in the subject is often.
Right.
That one I hadn't noticed. Now I'm going to look.
Yeah, but don't click on links in those emails.
No.
If you're not sure if your bank or Amazon is really trying to get in touch with you, they'll find a way to get in touch with you without some unsolicited email. So 9 out of 10 times, you probably should be ignoring those emails that you see.
Well, that's good. Look at me. I'm doing the right thing.
Okay. So with the email and that sort of information, I feel like we're really talking to our adult listeners right now. We went from government down to the adults. Can you bring us all the way back down to kids? Yeah. I know you did mention Minecraft and Fortnite once already, but with the things that our kids are doing on the computer, which is the video games, YouTube for sure, possibly some shopping, do you have a couple of tips for them on things they might stay away from or just to perk up their sensors just a little bit of, hey, that might be a bad guy?
Yeah, I would caution all of our kid listeners to be very careful with the chat rooms and talking to people. You don't know who you're talking to in these games. They might not be who you think they are. So if you must be in these chat rooms, keep it to just the game. Don't give them information about you. Avoid using your real name if you can. Never, ever, ever give your phone number or address. Never tell anybody in a chat room anything about your family. Even as simple as, oh, my brother goes to this school or my sister goes to this dance school. That is information that should be kept private. Never, ever give that information. So, you know, if you're in these chat rooms, be hyper aware. If you'd like to buy things on the internet, always ask your parents first. You know, never enter your credit card in an online store that, first of all, you don't get your parents' permission, but also you don't really know where you're putting your credit card because it can get out there and be pretty damaging for your parents. So ask your parents first if it's okay to use your credit card on the internet and make sure that you know where you're shopping.
Yeah.
Those are great. So now we're going to segue into tell us a little bit about your book. That's kind of the other side of it, isn't it? Isn't your book called Can You Crack the Code?
When I started writing for children, somebody that I respect very much said, well, why don't you write a book about your job? And I said, well, no kid reader would ever want to read a book about my job. My job is boring. But it turns out that they were onto something. So I wrote a book called Can You Crack the Code? It's a book about, sort of the subtitle is, a fascinating history of ciphers and cryptography.
Ooh.
Okay.
That it talks about the history of crypto and ciphers, and it goes all the way back to the times of Julius Caesar and how he used ciphers to keep his military secrets safe. And
many, oh, that's so cool.
Many people believe that Julius Caesar's successes on the battlefield is because he was a pretty savvy, you know, cryptographer, and he learned how to keep his military secrets safe. And the book then goes in to talk about, you know, modern cryptography and encryption and decryption and how to keep kids safe on the internet. I wrote the book to give kids a bit of a glimpse into what I do at my job, but also to give them the tools to use the internet in a way that's smart and responsible.
Oh, that sounds fabulous.
I love that. It sounds like a fascinating read for any of our kids, any of our listeners that are listening to this and are thinking, man, I love the idea of both sides of the coin of being the good guy, of keeping everything safe, or possibly being the bad guy, cracking that code to get in. And it sounds like your book kind of addresses sort of both of those.
It does. And it talks about even, we call the bad guy hackers, we call them black hat hackers. And they're actually good hackers. And we call those hackers white hat hackers.
Gotcha.
Okay.
And I love this story. I'm going to tell this a really brief story that will appeal to our kid listeners. There was a 16-year-old who was able to hack into Google.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And we call him a white hat hacker because once he hacked, he told Google how he did it. And trying to do a good thing. So he explained to Google where their problem was. And as a reward, they paid this teenager a very large sum of money. I don't remember the exact amount, but it was like $150,000 or something.
Holy cow.
Wow.
And they gave him a job.
Very smart.
So, kids, you can do really great things with these hacking tools. It doesn't have to be for bad, it could be for good. And these kids are doing these wonderful things for the industry. So, and then there's the gray hat hackers, which, you know, they could be bad, they could be good. We're not quite.
Oh my gosh. Well, we have learned so much, but now we're at the time in our show where we have a challenge. So I'm very curious to see what kind of challenge you have for our listeners, Ella.
All right. Well, my challenge to you is let's find a way to make passwords strong, but easy, right?
Okay.
Yeah, because I can never remember mine. Yeah, I can never remember my strong passwords.
Right, because they say, okay, you need one character, special character, and one number, and one capital letter, and like, it has to be like 37 characters long. And So my challenge for our listeners is to come up with a password that's strong and yet easy for you to remember, because if it's hard to remember, you're probably going to write it on a piece of paper. And right. That's secure, right? Because someone can see it. So that's my challenge.
I think that's a great challenge. Like, yeah, I'm going to have to work on that myself.
I like it a lot. I think a lot of our listeners are going to go work on that as soon as this episode is over.
Oh. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this has been an amazing episode. I have learned so much about cybersecurity, and I hope everyone else has too. Thank you so much for being on Solve It for Kids, Ella.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Yay.
Well, I don't know about you listeners or you, Jennifer, but I was right in my introduction. I definitely learned some things today. What about you, Jen?
Oh my gosh, I learned so much. And you were right. It's a lot of it is secret. But Elvis gave us some great information that I'm actually going to put to use on my own computer.
Absolutely. And all of us have to do her challenge. Because any of us that are using computers, we know that we are reusing some of those passwords more than we are supposed to. So we need to do what Miss Ella has asked, and that is to create a very good, strong password that, here's the kicker, we will remember.
That last part, that's me. I can come up with really good ones that I can never remember. And then if you write them down, right, then that's not great because there's no security. Okay, so listeners, we are not asking you to send us your passwords. We are asking you to go to our website, solveitforkids.com, and look at all the tips that Ella is going to leave for us there. And if you have a comment or something that you learned by listening to this podcast, be sure to tag us. We are at KidSolve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We would love to hear from you.
And we promise not to password protect all of the episodes on our website. So you will be able to hear us next time on Solve It for Kids.